-3 is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older.
-3 with Dave Dameshek.
Hi, hello, and happy baseball season, sports fans. An eventful day here on -3, presented as ever by our pals over there at Omaha. I hope you're ready to roll in to the sport formerly known as our national pastime. I happen to be excited about it, semi-optimistic even, about my favorite football team. Of course, it's always football season here on -3. Also, that's true in my heart, specifically the chapter on the calendar in football season that we're in right now, draft season. And we're about to talk to one of the very best in the biz. He did it for real. He actually general managered and war roomed and all that for the New York Jets and for the Miami Dolphins. Now you watch him on ESPN. You're going to be seeing a lot of him in the coming month here in advance of the draft. And one thing that he said that really caught my eye earlier this week was he advocated, and Eddie Spaghetti there behind the glass, he was advocating, if I was hearing him correctly, for the notion that I have expressed a number of times myself here. At some point, year five, year six, year seven, your best chances of winning the Super Bowl have already come and gone. He said, did Tannenbaum, that the Cardinals should trade Kyler Murray to Minnesota, who's QB needy, of course, and just rebooted the position with J.J. McCarthy. This is something I've kind of said myself here. Is that what you're picking up from Tannenbaum?
Yeah, that's what he was saying. I did think a lot about this. I understand from a money standpoint, and that's a part of a GM's job. Like, they have to kind of, you know, balance the checkbook and figure out, you know, where allocate the money in different areas, like he points out. But I think if you're using the example of next season with J.J. McCarthy as a rookie versus Kyler Murray, who would you rather have? If you want to use like a baseball term, like war, wins above replacement, like, I feel like Kyler is probably worth another win and a half, if not more, at the very minimum, over McCarthy. Now, you want to talk about years on the road. If McCarthy develops into a great quarterback, sure, I get that. But Kyler Murray came back from his injury last year, and I was, you know, keeping an eye on him because I did have him on a fantasy team, and myself and Jen kind of tracked his return, and he looked pretty good. Like, he came back, like, he was still scrambling.
He
was
making plays. Trey McBride immediately had a nice little connection. The tight end, they can obviously, if they keep Kyler, if you go with the you know, I guess what would count as chalk for draft analysis, now they're going to get one of those wide receivers, and obviously you give that to Kyler Murray, maybe the team soars. But as I've said for 25 years, if you don't see yourself in the NFL making a Super Bowl run, then why are you going to hold on to? I get, like, next year we need Kyler Murray and we'll be better. But if you don't think you have a Super Bowl push in you with Kyler Murray, you may as well reboot down to zero. So looking forward to having that conversation with Mike Tannenbaum. Eventful in the sports world, eventful here too. I hope the audio is all right here, because for some reason our wireless internet is out, and also inside me is what's going on too. I'm in the pregame for my first ever colonoscopy. It's an exciting event in my life, Eddie Spaghetti, and I'm doing the thing that they require you to do in order to get the colonoscopy the day before is apparently the nightmare. It hasn't fully hit me yet. I'm in the early stages of the, like I say, the pregame of it. And it's like, well, you got to be clean so that the doctor doesn't have to deal with any of the nonsense in your intestines. He wants to inspect there, needs it pristine. And my question back is like, I didn't make you be a doctor. If you don't want to be dealing with the insides and all the muck and mire that's in there, then don't be a doctor. Why do I have to deal with it? It's very similar to this new hip drop tackle. Why is it on the defender to spare the offensive player from getting injured? Like, you decided to be a running back, not me. Just go down when I get my hands on you. Why do I have to save you from injury? Same thing with me and this doctor. Why do I have to torture myself all day so that you get to stay nice and clean when you're in there doing stuff with my innards? You're the doctor. I'm just there laying down. I'll be knocked out. Anyway, I'm worried sick about that. I'm not as worried about the baseball season. Like I say, my glass is kind of half full. Me and Eddie Spaghetti are going to give you some of our best season-long props. In the meantime, you should go back and listen after this episode. Two Extra Points, me, Sarah Tiana, and Martin Weiss gave out some props, had a really good conversation about the upcoming baseball season, the new football rules. And we kind of touched on something that Hench and I talked about last week about these massive contracts and some of the people holding them, the Ohtani scandal. We'll see how soon it plays out, if it ever comes to a head as far as Ohtani goes. But in light of all that, it's fascinating that Draymond Green, who makes a lot of money too, got kicked out of an NBA game again on Wednesday night. And after the game, he and Steph Curry are doing their hugs and everything else. I mean, I got to think that Draymond's teammates have more than had it with him, and talk about a bad contract. Anywho, go back and listen to that Extra Points. I think you'll find that one entertaining. But right now, let's talk to the former GM of the Jets and get his thoughts on the quarterback league about a month away from the big day, the NFL draft. Mike Tannenbaum.
Let me squeeze in a quick break here.
Let me ask you a question, Eddie Spaghetti. Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? But before you answer, two words, Caesars Rewards. Those are the two words. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. I'm talking about hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, even more than just that. It's not only an app, it's an empire. 21 plus must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, or Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org, or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, here he is, everybody. And Ohm is the GM of the Jets and the Dolphins. Matter of fact, those Jets, and I've told Mike this on this show previously, they would have been in the Super Bowl if Rex Ryan had stuck with Sean Green over LT in the 2010 AFC title game in Heinz Field. He is never shy with his opinion on Get Up and Beyond. You're going to be seeing a lot of him in advance of the NFL draft. That's a good thing, except no substitutes. Follow only the real Tannenbaum. It's Mike Tannenbaum. How are you, man? Thanks for joining us.
Oh, great to be with you, my friend Dave. How is everything?
Everything is going pretty well. I'm a little bit confused. I've suddenly been jammed into this position of cynic where my favorite football team is concerned, specifically the quarterback room. Maybe we'll have time to talk about that, but I do want to jump in on this. And boy, I said to our producer, Tannenbaum's Twitter feed, we could just look at that and react to that and do full episodes off of it, because a lot of it jumps out at me. Specifically, the one I've noticed you've gotten a lot of reaction to was you suggesting that the Cards would do well to trade Kyler Murray to Minnesota and basically reboot at the position with someone that they get in the draft. Explain yourself what you're thinking here about this, because I've seen a lot of fans get into your Twitter feed and say mean-spirited things, which is rare on social media.
Yeah, that's never happened to me before. But look, I love J.J. McCarthy. I've been to a bunch of their practices and games. He's 6'2", 219. He started 28 games. He's lost one, thrown 49 touchdown passes, run for almost another 1,000 yards. And in really important moments, he's played really well. And when you look at 3rd-and-7 or longer, he has the best QBR of any quarterback this year. So in my mind, if you could pay him $8.5 million a year for the next 4 years, and he's 21 years old and he's been durable, or you could pay Kyler Murray, who's going to be 27, $35 million a year for the next 2 years, and he missed 9 games last year. Candidly, Dave, that's an easy decision. It's not who's better. It's saying, would you like to have J.J. McCarthy and $27 million? That's an easy answer for me.
Yeah, I mean, that makes all the sense, and I'll expand on it. I don't think it's a hot take, although it kind of sounds like it, because quarterback in a quarterback league, face of the franchise, all that. I'm going to expand on this because this is something I think, if I'm picking up what you're laying down, expands to even the guys on the short list of best QBs, this side of Patrick Mahomes at least. I think that Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson both are in some real peril at this point in their respective careers of being 21st century Dan Marinos, never winning a Super Bowl. I get a lot of, oh, come on, they'll get theirs. You know, on my side is the reality. They only give out one Lombardi at the end of the tournament. And Patrick Mahomes is going to be in the tournament next year and the year after that, as are Justin Fields now with Jim Harbaugh and otherwise. First of all, do you agree that Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson are in some peril here?
Yeah, I mean, look, sustainability is a big part of playing the position. You know, 66 different quarterbacks started last year, so they're great players. But because of their contract size, Dave, and their play style, like, they can get hit a lot. Look, if you ask the New York Jets, the Minnesota Vikings, and the Cincinnati Bengals, they would certainly agree with you, Dave, that the health of the quarterback is paramount.
But beyond even the health, and I don't know what Lamar Jackson's going to be 2-3 years from now. People have been calling for, he's going to be a diminished version of himself athletically at some point. I think that's true for Josh Allen, too. I think, in fact, Josh Allen, we see the gargantuan structure of the guy. I think that's the guy who's been in more collisions over the course of his career, and he might wear out more quickly than Lamar Jackson. But beyond all that, when you start giving the guy $50 million annually, it compromises the rest of the roster. And that's what I sort of took from your Kyler Murray remark. Yep. Was reboot back to zero, basically zero, with a rookie deal, so long as you land on the real deal at QB. He can't end up being a fraud. But if he's good, you're in a way better spot than having the superstar quarterback who's making the $50 million.
Yeah, Dave, it's really both things. Absolutely. And to me, I think you could put a really good argument. If you go back last year, like, this whole idea of, like, the middle class, like, I don't know if Kirk Cousins is worth $45 million. I think I'd rather have Gardner Minshew at $8 and give me $37 million a year. Like, unless they're a real difference maker, is it worth it? And, you know, candidly, I think Dallas is probably having some of that, those soul searching conversations as well.
I agree with that. Right.
Is Dak Prescott worth 50, whatever, fill in the blank, $55 million a year? Or do we go with, you know, Jacoby Brissett, or, you know, somebody in that, you know, even go get Ryan Tannehill for a year or two for, you know, half or a third of the price, and then go help your team? And look, Mahomes was able to survive, you know, Tyreek Hill graduating, but, you know, that's the exception to the rule.
And the exception is created, from what I can pick up, by the Chiefs really hitting on their draft picks. What fleshed out that team that won the Super Bowl last year were some really savvy draft picks up and down through the last couple of years, really building up that defense. Is that right? I mean, I think that's the lesson that the Bills and otherwise should be taking, not seeing if they can swing big on a Stephon Diggs type. Rather, I mean, harder to do than it is for me to say, but hitting on your draft picks is how you are sustainably a Super Bowl contender if you're paying your guy $50 million, right?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And look, you know, context is everything here, which is like what I would be saying to Josh Allen, like, look, like you're going to be playing with, you know, rookie offensive tackle. In this case, they let, you know, Poyer go, you know, they let Micah Hyde go, Tre'Davious White. Now they have Taylor Rapp, but they're basically saying, hey, for us to win ostensibly in 2024, we're going to have to outscore people. You know, we see in Kansas City, they work so young with, you know, Snead and McDuffie, Joshua Williams. So you have to identify the parts that are really going to have to be, you know, replaced. Like the inverse of this discussion right now, Dave, is the advantage, like San Francisco, go get McCaffrey, go get, you know, Chase Young. You can do that. But now, like, there's a tension point with Brandon Ayuk. I'm sure, you know, Kyle and John are sitting there saying, hey, like, you know, is it Ayuk or is it Deebo Samuel? Like, we can't afford both. Jed York came out today and said, hey, you know, Brock Purdy's contract's going to be massive. Again, great problem to have, but no question, you know, these decisions impact, you know, what you're going to do. And that's why, to me, like, you may say that Kyle Murray is a better player, but I'm just hard for, and, you know, it's kind of, we're like on this special and I'm trying to go back and forth with Mel Kiper and Phil Yates, both of whom I love. And, like, you know, my question to them is, like, are you sure that Kyler Murray's $27 million better? Is it more reasonable that he's going to finish 17 games than J.J. McCarthy? Because finishing the season is so important now. Like, that is a, like, those two things combined are major, major factors.
Well, that's my recurring remark, too. You talk about the context of it is the thing I've said a million times, and I'll say it a million and first for you now, is that everybody keeps pointing to, you have no shot in the AFC specifically, but in the NFL with Patrick Mahomes in it, if you don't get a superstar quarterback yourself. I buy that to some degree, but Josh Allen hasn't worked his way around Patrick Mahomes, and neither has Lamar Jackson. Joe Burrow so far is the only known kryptonite still in the league. Tom Brady did it through the AFC side. And so I'm wondering if you see, and if I'm picking up what you're laying down too, with what you see with the Steelers, do you think they're actively trying to follow the Eagles/Niners model, which is to build up the roster, kind of forego the QB position, or at minimum find really cheap bargains out there and dominate everywhere else? And that's how you're going to even up with Patrick Mahomes and a relatively diminished roster everywhere else in KC?
Well, you know, what's interesting about Pittsburgh, I think they got, you know, historically, what they did is they got better and less expensive. I think Russell Wilson and Justin Fields have more talent than Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph, and they're spending $4 million between the two of them. So, like, there's only upside. Look, a year from now, they could, you know, move on from both those guys, have no dead money, and they're, you know, fresh and ready to go. So I thought the risk reward with Pittsburgh in particular was very unique and like, to me, very opportunistic.
Well, I mean, where Russ is concerned, to me, to my eyes, he's a quick twitch athlete or dependent on that to a large degree at his very best. And that's come and gone. So to me, what I keep pointing to is the 2012 49ers. Start the season with a vet, stability and all that, and then at some point flip a switch to the more talented kid, not Colin Kaepernick in this case, Justin Fields. The question I have is, and I know you dig Fields, there are a lot of football guys, not fantasy people, not media people, but football guys like you who say, 3 years evidence of Justin Fields. He's a specimen. He ain't a winning quarterback in pro football. How say you?
I say it's a grade of incomplete. 40 touchdowns, 30 interceptions, 25 years old, tremendous character. And I think what we're going to see is we're going to see Arthur Smith design an offense where, first of all, it's going to be run-based. They're not going to ask him to do too much. And, you know, there's going to be three or four throws a game he's going to have to make, but he can also make plays outside the pocket. He can make plays with his legs. So I think context is everything. I'd be surprised if he didn't win the job at some point. And he may not be top eight or top 10, but I think we're going to say, like, wow, you know, they can win a lot of games with him.
Yeah, I'm with you. If either guy's main, I mean, you know, Russell Wilson lost 8 fumbles last year, too. People keep talking about the 26-8, but he had 16 turnovers in 15 games. Either way, yeah, I'm with you. Fields can just take care of the ball a little bit. That's the premise for what you're asking that guy in what I imagine they're going to try to do, which is make 3 or 4 special plays over the course of 60 minutes. That's all we need. Just don't give the ball away over the course of 60 minutes if you can help it. How much pressure you talk about J.J. McCarthy, and I really admire how bold you are with statements that you make that I do not read coming from you as hot takes to try and get attention. I think that you mean what you say. How much pressure, if you're in the GM chair, is there to take the guy that is the GM version of chalk? Like, if everybody is saying Caleb Williams is obviously the QB you have to take if you're first overall, how much pressure is it on you to say, like, all right, we'll take Caleb Williams because everybody else agreed too, and I can't be fired for doing what everybody else would have done, as opposed to, like, I know J.J. McCarthy's the better guy. I'm going with him, and it may cost me my job.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're asking a really interesting and philosophical question, which is, you know, there's a great, like, nugget of wisdom, which is someone's going to educate your owner, so it might as well be you. And, like, to me, like, I always felt like, and I had the privilege of doing it at 2 different spots, but, like, if I could sit between the head coach and the owner and look to my left and the right, and they were on the same page as me, Dave, I just didn't care what anybody else thought. Hmm. Those two guys understood I was good. And, like, that's to me, like, hey, I do think J.J. McCarthy is the fourth best player in this draft. That I have no doubt in my mind. And I would just say, like, hey, look, you know, Mr. Bidwell, right? If we're in Arizona, we need a receiver. Mar Harrison's a great player, but we have a chance to save $27 million, get somebody that's 6 years younger and may be just as good as the guy we got. This is why we should do it. And by the way, once we make this decision, which you're going to hold me accountable for, like, good or bad, hopefully we're talking about an extension, but here's what people are going to say, that people in the media have groupthink. People in the media will say we should take Marvin Harrison, and that's a reasonable take, but here's where people are going to come out on it. So if we could, and then when that does come out, then the next conversation you have with the owners to say, hey, remember when we talked about it, here's why they're criticizing us. And at the end of the day, it all comes out in the wash because it's how well you do.
I have bellyached quite a bit as somebody, again, not just a Steelers fan, but grew up in Pittsburgh, going to Pitt football games on Saturdays and Steelers games on Sundays. I was over the moon when Kenny Pickett was available to transition from a guy who's going to go into the Hall of Fame, only wore black and gold, to transition from that guy into the Pitt kid walking across. It was spiritually, you had to make that move. It didn't work out. And what I have picked up is I am in the minority caring about that. If he ain't good, then you got to move on from him. Okay. I think that it would be more difficult for the Arizona Cardinals to say, yeah, we're shipping out Kyler Murray. There are a lot of one jerseys walking around in Glendale, Arizona, as there are 17 jerseys up in Western New York. But if you can assume that icy cool sort of, like, we're in it to win, isn't the right move to kind of move on? You wouldn't do it because of marketing blow. I'm like, you traded Lamar Jackson. You can't do it. But wouldn't that be what you're getting at is that you should just every 5 years just reboot back to a rookie QB?
Yeah. Or again, get him on a very much more economically efficient.
Right. That would be that. Right.
Yeah. I made a lot of hard decisions in my career. You're going to be held accountable regardless of what people think. So you got to go with, you know, your process and get to the right result and not worry about what people think. And yeah, you trade Kyler Murray, there's going to be blowback. I get it. But you know what? The first time he throws a touchdown pass, you know, in the fall, people are going to forget about it. You know, that's just the reality of it. They'll root for, you know, your team, and they're going to root for, you know, especially when you're winning, you can't worry about any of the ancillary noise.
Well, it's awesome stuff. Obviously, Tannenbaum is the guy you want to be listening to on GetUp on all ESPN platforms in advance of this draft. He is one of the voices who actually knows what he's talking about. So check that out. I see you got neighbors now ahead of Harrison, all the rest of it. JJ McCarthy, you're singing songs about. These are different opinions than what is the collective wisdom. At least last thing, because I saw it on your Twitter feed too. You like the new kickoff rule. Here's a dig this. If I'm seeing it right, if my eyes are absorbing the replays of what I've seen in the minor league, didn't the Steelers just potentially land a guy that's going to score a lot of touchdowns? Because it's not just that he's a kick returner, Cordarrelle Patterson. These are special teams guys. So by definition, they're not the best players on your team. They're not your best defensive players. They're special teamers. How are those guys going to get Cordarrelle Patterson? And what's further, how's anybody, why don't you put Derrick Henry on the kick return, Baltimore? Hey, Noah Fant, you're now a kick returner too, right? Isn't that the way to score a lot of time? Is that going to happen this year?
I think it's going to be fascinating to see it play out. I think people are going to, you know, pump more air into these returners. A guy like Cooper DeJean from Iowa probably may go a little bit higher now because of his return. Like, he'll break ties in his favor. So it's going to be fascinating, Dave, to see it play out.
Awesome stuff, Mike. Really appreciate you carving out a little time for us. I know this is your busy season, so we really enjoy checking in with you once a year at least. That's all we ask is one visit with Tannenbaum pre-draft every year, and you're always kind enough to make it so. You're awesome. We enjoy watching you. Like I told you before we got going, I really do dig what you guys got going on. Get up there. Best to Ryan Clark. Tell that Hembo to get back to me already. I send him my list sometimes. I want his reaction to him. Anyway, enjoy the draft process, and I guess we'll talk to you in about a year, if not before.
All right, great. Thanks so much. Really appreciate you having me.
Sure thing. There he goes, everybody. The real, I say, real Tannenbaum. Track him down. And now a quick break. There he goes, Eddie Spaghetti. What did you think? I thought some real gems in there. At least, like I say, I appreciate that he isn't just completely chalk and pretending as though he's selling a new idea. He has some fresh thoughts here.
I do think that trend will start to happen in the NFL, like going back to the McCarthy versus Kyler thing, not even just them specifically, but overall, like, do we pay this quarterback X amount of dollars or do we spread it around to the rest of our roster to kind of build up the roster? And I think people realize, people meaning GMs of other teams, that they don't have a guy named Patrick Mahomes, that they're better off probably beefing up their lines and getting some cornerbacks and, you know, depth at receiver. And it's going to change the league going forward. So, like, it is a copycat league. At first, it was get a quarterback who can go toe-to-toe with them. And now it's going to be, you know, copy what the 49ers did, copy what your Steelers are going to do. And I think that is a smarter move going forward, especially with the hit or miss rate with all the rookie quarterbacks coming in. And this class supposedly supposed to be good. But as you always point out, like, somebody's going to be bad out of this group is going to get drafted. So, you know, we'll see in a few months here.
You know what's interesting about all that is, right, it's not 100% bulletproof that if you draft a guy in the first five picks that he's guaranteed to be a stud QB and a difference maker for you. But, you know, in the copycat league, as all professional leagues are, but in the NFL, you know, I do wonder if the Eagles or the Niners had won the Super Bowl. Sometimes it comes down to just that last 60 minutes and the league will react to it. I do wonder if more people would be leaning into that model, which is like, and by the way, the Niners, as you just heard Tannenbaum talking about, they're going to pay out Purdy at just like the Eagles did Hurts and give up the advantage that we're talking about here. I do wonder if the league would start to look around and say, like, you know, there's only one Patrick Mahomes and let's do what these NFC powerhouses have done over the last couple of years. And go with that model and build around a rookie QB or a cheaper intermediate option like Tannenbaum kind of floated there as well. Anyway, good conversation with him, and we appreciate him taking the time to do that. By the way, what did you think about, I didn't have time to get into it with him, Spaghetti. He said JJ McCarthy is better than your friend Danny Dimes right now, is better at football. Not saying like he's going to be saying he's better at playing football right now than Danny Dimes is. However, what is he now through season 5 now?
Yeah. I mean, I would agree that in the sense that Daniel Jones's knee is probably still balky and not working. But the McCarthy thing, I've never seen, you know, and Jeff Schwartz tweeted about it, and a lot of people pointed out like the disparity between the media and what like fans think. But like with McCarthy, the guy's barely played in fourth quarters, best offensive line in college football, one of the best rushing attacks in college football, a damn good defense. Obviously, they win out. Like, he hasn't really been pressured, but some of his metrics show, like Mike was pointing out, like great, you know, on third and long, and he's great throwing in the middle of the field, which people will point out. Like, he could push the ball, but has the athleticism, has a solid arm. But I just, you know, the team, I guess in my mind, the Michigan team was just too good the years that he was there, and he was never really battle tested. And I'm just a little bit afraid of that. And I feel like he is becoming this like late push media darling to get, like, first people were like, is he even a first round pick? And now they're like, oh, he may go ahead of Drake May. And that's crazy to me, because it was always going to be Drake May and Caleb Williams for like 2 years running. And now that McCarthy's making this late push. So I know my Giants are involved, and they have like a private meeting with him. I don't even know if he'll be there at 6, which is crazy, because again, like, he went from being a guy that
doesn't sound like it.
He might have not been picked in the first 32. And now he's going to go, you know, potentially top 3 and most likely top 4 if the Vikings or some other team trade up in that spot. So it's a lame answer. I don't know if I have a strong opinion either way. Like, I think he was a passenger on a great Michigan team, but clearly per the tape and other stuff, like, he does a lot of things well at the position. So,
well, Harbaugh too, by the way, Harbaugh gives
best pro days ever seen for Jim Harbaugh.
He loves him, but he also is talking about the importance, and I think everybody kind of gets that, of the offensive line and the stability it provides to the entire roster, and how dependable it is if you have a good one to be able to build around that and all of that. And that's exactly what he had at Michigan. And obviously, some head coaches in college aren't incented to just lie to pros to get their kids drafted high. Like, that's the balance of that is you want to do right by the student athletes if you're the head coach, to sell them up and try to get them. But your credibility takes a hit if you do that too many times and the kid ain't the real deal. Jim Harbaugh doesn't have that pressure. He's now in the NFL, so he's really putting a big sell on this J.J. McCarthy to do right by the kid. I don't know what the answer is, obviously, but, you know, it's funny because Tannenbaum is the media, but he also was an actual GM, and he likes McCarthy more than some. It's no wonder, I guess, that it's so fascinating, because ultimately nobody is right until we're about 2 or 4 seasons down the line to know who was right about all of that. At minimum, fun to talk about. And I do think philosophically there are different ways to skin the cat, as we've been talking about for the last couple of years here. And yet people don't. I'm not talking about fans. I'm talking about NFL teams seem to be obsessed about, like, we got to go. Okay, yeah, we get it. We got to go get that quarterback. It's like, look at what the Niners have done around Brock Purdy. That's worked out pretty well. By the way, look at what the Lions have done around Jared Goff. I know he's a high pedigree guy, but he was also considered to be borderline bust until he landed in Detroit in a real good situation with, by the way, a great offensive line.
I think if, you know, specifically using the Giants, since they're my favorite team, they're going to be in the realm of possibility of drafting McCarthy. I just feel like if he's there at 6 and they want to take a quarterback, I'd be okay with it, just because you have to take him there. But I feel like moving heaven and earth to move up 2 slots to draft a guy that, like I said, not too long ago was not even supposed to be a first round pick. And then he is a bust. I just feel like that sets back your franchise, and you kind of got forced into doing it because of the pressure of other teams around you. And that's kind of where I would draw the line.
Right. That's what I'm talking about. Right. And obviously it would seem Washington's going to get, it seems a fait accompli. We don't know which guy specifically, but, you know, they're going to add one too. So now you're talking about a division of Hurts, Dak, and one of those kids. And so the Giants will feel deficient at the position, but maybe they have an advantage if they listen to what we're saying and what Tannenbaum is kind of saying here. And I think the Giants, and I think most professional football teams, would do well to listen to the thoughts of Dave Damashek and his Palette Spaghetti on these matters. Now,
about a quick bonus quarterback, and I'm sorry for the highlights, but the Joe Milton highlights, like, I bought into a 6'5", 250-pound guy. Like, I understand his biggest problem is accuracy, and that's probably the most important attribute for a quarterback to have. But from his size, his arm talent, his mobility, I guess his 40 time was amazing. Like, if this guy could be Josh Allen 2.0, who also had accuracy issues coming into the NFL, he's probably like a third-round projected pick right now. Like, I'd take a flyer on that guy.
I don't want to be like a hipster talking about, like, I was in on this before they got on the major label, because I wasn't doing this until, you know, this past year at South Carolina. But Spencer Rattler is the guy who now the hipsters are on. Everybody is now talking about that's where there's some potential value after the first round if you're looking for a QB. All right, well, we'll see about all that quickly here, Eddie Spaghetti. Let's get some baseball picks here. It is opening day, and I do want to issue at least a couple of thoughts here. And by the way, I don't have that much time because, you know, the clock's ticking. That colonoscopy is coming. You know, and there's no avoiding that train right now. And in the meantime, I've got other things running through my body to clean me out. I don't understand this torture device. And I'm supposed to marvel at where we are in the 21st century medicine, but I don't know why it requires medieval torture elements to my innards. But anyway, let's not get down about that. By the way, you also have a little torture going on here. Your Rags are playing the Avs. I've said it before. I'm going to say it again. Stanley Cup preview, Eddie Spaghetti. Stanley Cup final preview. Get in on it.
I am a little afraid of, you know, what's funny is the Rangers kryptonite is like teams that are fast on the rush and they seem to give up a lot of odd man rushes from time to time. But the Rangers on 5-on-5 have been the best team at doing that, which is not really their style of play. I feel like the Avs have some speed. They don't have the depth when they won the year they won the cup. I think defensively they're missing some pieces too. And I think Rangers obviously have a clear advantage at goaltender, but I can see it happening. I think that as long, you know, the Avs need to score a lot to win, obviously. So I think if the Rangers have, you know, Igor has a couple games where he stands on his head, then the Rangers could, you know, they can go toe to toe with them.
Ooh, sounds like somebody's starting to actually envision this.
I'm not talking about in the Stanley Cup. I'm just talking about in pure matchups versus a certain team. There's certain teams I'm afraid of. Like Winnipeg scares the crap out of me with Hellebuyck and just how they play, like kind of lockdown. Like they spanked the Rangers not too long ago. One of the Rangers' few losses the last 2 months. But the
Winnipeg Avs, Jets. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but the NHL has better sense than the
Dallas too.
Winnipeg Jets get to the final.
Boring, boring teams. The national fan base, obviously, Colorado way more interesting to watch, way more of a fun team to watch, and they have, you know, Nathan MacKinnon who's a superstar. But yeah, I just feel like their style of play, Rangers could kind of hang with them more so than some of these like lockdown, really good defensive teams.
I'm gonna make a bold statement, MacKinnon. By a tick, a better watch than McJesus. I enjoy watching MacKinnon play. His frenetic energy on the ice is something to behold.
Both great skaters, yeah.
All right, last thing, baseball. I said it on Extra Points. I'll say it again here. Juan Soto, you get some added value if you bet him not just to win the American League home run title, but all of Major League. Like I say, 9-1. Is where I see value there and running through.
It dropped down to 800 because people listen to you.
Is that right?
See, yeah, I have it on my phone. I agree with you. I think short right field. I was talking about this with Sarah, I think off air before Extra Points. And I said left-handed bat, short right field porch. And he has protection to line up now with Giancarlo and Judge. As long as they stay healthy, I think that's a great call.
I was also looking at where the biggest gap is from the division favorite. There are some real bum teams. And so the Braves at minus 290 to win the NL East versus the Nats down there at plus 10,000. It's a gargantuan gap from first to worst. And so looking at that, the Dodgers are more of a sure thing, according to the bookmakers. The Dodgers are minus 600. Next up are the Giants up in San Francisco at 10-1 and the Snakes at 11-1, Padres at 12-1. Forget about the Rockies. We talked about it on Extra Points. I really do like the value of one of those teams. I'm just not sure which team it is that I believe in. I do think with the Ohtani thing and people are saying, well, it's going to take a year to investigate. And so they'll settle in. Ohtani will, the Dodgers will, and all of that. I don't know. I'm skeptical that isn't a volatile situation, that things might not crop up. That would be a distraction. And by the way, it's not just all predicated on conspiratorial kind of stuff. The Giants have an actual pitching staff and an advantage. The Snakes were in the World Series last year. So I think that it's a sneaky good play to sprinkle something on one of those teams. And the tightest gap from worst to first among the baseball divisions is the NL Central. The Cards are your favorite, but just at plus 90, the Cubs right behind them at 2-1. The Red Legs are plus 325, and there are the Buccos at 11-1 as your last play, longest odds. I think that's kind of a fun play, but that's going to be your tightest division per the bookmakers. Where do you, I mean, I'm not going to put anything on the Buccos to win the division, like I've said, plus, I mean, over 75 and a half on the season is the play. They got the 76 last year. That was without O'Neal Cruz and without Paul Skeens, who's, by the way, a very interesting guy to play. He's not going to be pitching in the bigs probably through the first 2 months, but at 25-1, if he comes in and dominates as the first overall, as he very well might, that could be some good value there. Eddie Spaghetti, your favorite props, and then we call it a week.
Sure. I know we were kind of joking about this on minus three with the Yankees win total, but it's no fun going under because I believe it's minus 120 if it's under 91 and a half for the Yankees win total there. I actually would take the over a plus 91 and a half, yeah, but a plus 100 because last year, 82 win team, and I just feel like everything was going wrong for that team. And yes, obviously, Gerrit Cole, Cy Young, and Judge, phenomenal year. But outside of those two guys, and then Judge did get hurt too. Like the Rizzo had that really bad drought where he could not hit a home run, and you had they bring up Anthony Volpe, who was hitting below the Mendoza line, and just all these problems throughout the year, and they plagued him. And then you bring in Soto, and you bring in Verdugo, and they just traded for a utility middle infielder. And I just think the pitching staff, even without Cole, can kind of hang on enough for the month or so, 2 months that he's going to be out. And I just think I could see 10 more wins. So I think the Yankees will. I'm not saying they're going to win the AL East, but I do like them over, the 92 win mark. I think they'll reach that no problem, even if it's just that their bats mashing their way to wins and they're winning games like 9-8.
I'm going to say Yankees fans, including you, but not just you. I mean, the Gerrit Cole thing, I get it, but the crying poor and like, oh man, I don't know how I feel about the Yanks. I mean, the Orioles are obviously a really good team at plus 180 to win the division. The Yanks are right behind them at plus 190. By the way, I don't think it matters for much, advanced analytics, but I think the New York Yankees are going to field in terms of just raw physical specimens, the biggest outfield in the history of people. Is that right? With Aaron, that's got to be it, right? I mean, this would have to be it. Giancarlo, Judge, and Soto have to stand as probably the heaviest if you just put them on a scale together, but also just in dimensions. This has to, this is a linebacker room. These are the New York Giants of Bill Parcells, right?
Yeah, until they inevitably move Judge to first base to avoid further injury, which I could definitely see happening in the next couple of years. But as of now, yeah, it's a pretty big, bulky outfield. And I do agree with you. I would put money down on Juan Soto at plus 800 now to win the home run crown and for the entire MLB. And with that, another bet that I like too, we're talking about the Dodgers, like they're massive favorites, minus 600 in the NL West. The Braves minus 290, pretty big favorites in the NL East. And the last team that's a relatively big favorite, the Houston Astros at minus 115. If you just take all those big favorites and you parlay them together, the three-leg parlay, it's plus 23 to win the divisions. I think that Smart. Is a pretty safe bet. The Astros are just, they're always going to win games. They're always just going to be consistently good. The Dodgers, even if Ohtani has some issues and he's missing time, I know he's not pitching, I think their roster is still good enough. I do like the Giants a lot. I know Sarah gave out the Giants to make the playoffs on EP. I definitely agree with that. They have two guys in their roster. I mean, signing Blake Snell, you have to, with him and Webb, like two guys that could win the Cy Young in the NL. And then I think the Braves too, like I'm not going to trust the Mets. I just still think the Braves are like a little bit better than the Phillies. So if you like those three big favorites to win their divisions,
that's plus
23 is pretty good. And then,
fool's gold, but to be parlaying those, it really does seem like they're each such prohibitive favorites that, and you're not making a blanket like, hey, Stanley Cup opening round, all the favorites are heavy favorites and they're all going to win, so bet them all. You're picking three. It's interesting.
The ones that are the big favorites.
Think this could come through. Right.
That's the only way to get money. And my last bet, and this is something that Toby brought up on Trendy, and I think this is super fun. You could follow it all year long, is if the longest home run in the MLB upcoming season, that means the entire league, every batter, everyone that steps to the plate, the longest home run over 499 and a half, is at plus 170 since they've been StatTracker, I believe, has been tracking the home run distance since 2015. There's been three home runs over that mark. I believe CJ Cron did it a few years back in Coors Field, and Giancarlo Stanton last year had the longest home run at 494. So if you say yes at plus 170, that's going to be a 500 foot home run, you're basically just rooting for every team, every player to just mash home runs. And I feel like with so many games this season, like, that's just a fun bit to place and just be rooting for the long ball. So that's
O'Neill Cruz will do it twice himself this year. I'm calling my shot here and now. Good stuff, Eddie Spaghetti. Hope that sets your baseball season up. You, the listener, I do like some of those long plays that you're going to be able to be in on maybe through 162 games to stay engaged there. So best wishes with that, with your baseball team. I hope they win unless they're playing my team. Same goes for your March Madness teams. As we know, my teams did not make that tournament. We'll continue to get you right for the NFL draft next week. In the meantime, make sure you're checking out all the great shows on the Extra Points Network. Spaghetti just mentioned Trendy this week with Brad Evans, Toby Mergler, and him, a dynamite duo. Lemon Pepper Parlay fellas doing their great work as usual. Speaking of which, Martin Weiss joined me and Sarah Tiana on Extra Points for a banner episode there. Go back and listen to The Table Setter to start the week with me and Kevin Hench. A really strong conversation, no surprise there, with Hench's participation. And with all that being said, all the best to you. Enjoy the sports weekend. We'll talk to you on the other side of it. Until then, thanks so much, sports fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.